this year, I'm watching nearly every Duke game specifically to scout for potential Cavs for the draft next year. And so I'm locked in on that game yesterday. And if you, you know, if you're looking to handicap March Madness and things like that, Duke, if they could shoot the ball like they did last night, nobody's beating them. They're now 21-2. And last night against Virginia, they went 13 of 21 from 3-point range, shot 62%. And Virginia is the best team in the country at defending the three. So Duke will beat literally anybody in the country if they shoot the ball like they did last night. And I've got some thoughts, and I'm going to ask Justin about this here in just a minute, on RJ Barrett and, of course, Zion Williamson, who had one of the most amazing blocks I've ever seen before in my life. But I'm really interested in Cameron Reddish, and I'm going to ask Justin about that here. Justin Rowan, Fear the Sword, joins me now on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Justin, good day. Thanks for joining me. How are you?
No problem. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
I want to start with Anthony Davis. I talked about it there in the opening segment, the opening hour. The league stepping in, forcing the Pelicans to play Anthony Davis just because he's healthy, because they're citing the rest rules. Are you as angry about that as I am? If I'm Gail Benson, and I know Jeff Van Gundy went on a little rant about it, if I'm Gail Benson or Elvin Gentry, I'm up in arms about that. What's your take on it?
Yeah, I think I'd be pretty frustrated that they're not being allowed to really make their own decisions. I mean, you don't see the league stepping in and telling the Cavs that they have to play J.R. Smith or anything like that. This is obviously, we're talking about a different caliber of player, but the Pelicans weren't forcing Davis to demand a trade, and they should be allowed to handle it however they want. Not necessarily up in arms, but I do see where their frustration would be coming from.
Justin Rowan, it's at Cavs Anita on Twitter, hosted the Chase Down Pod, and of course does an outstanding job with Fear the Sword. Is that how you say it? Is it Cavs Anita? Cavs Anita? How would you pronounce your Twitter handle, Justin?
Yeah, I think you nailed it. It's one of those things that looks way better in writing than it does out loud.
Right. As a lot of what you try to do in radio tends to be. Did you watch the Virginia Duke game yesterday? Are you in Zion or bust mode? I know you were an RJ Barrett fan at the beginning of the season, and certainly I think Barrett makes a fine consolation prize. I'm watching last night, and I'm enamored with Cameron Reddish's potential offensively long term. If the Cavs don't hit on the number one pick and land Zion, is all lost, or are you going to be okay with that?
I don't think all is lost. I think Zion's the clear top player in this draft.
Right.
That's pretty easy for anyone to see. I think he's the one guy that's going to be great no matter what situation he's thrown into, whereas the other guys are going to need some infrastructure around them. In many ways, it kind of reminds me of the Blake Griffin draft, where Blake just stood out as this freak athlete that's going to turn any franchise around. But then you look later in that draft, even though they were less heralded, you had guys like James Harden and Steph Curry that went on to win MVPs. It wouldn't shock me if somebody else in this draft ended up being better than Zion, whether that be as a result of injuries or someone just kind of rising to the occasion. But he's kind of a no-doubt guy. After that, it becomes a bit of a crapshoot, and it's going to depend on how well you develop guys, what situations you put them in, and things of that nature.
If the Cavs end up with the second pick, there's going to be a groundswell, I would say, for Ja Morant. I mean, earlier in the season, this guy leads the league leads the country in assists. He's a very explosive athlete. He's playing for Murray State in his sophomore year, averaging, I believe, like 24 points a game. He is a very, very appealing prospect. Are you taking best player available? I mean, you can't pass on a guy because you got Colin Sexton, especially based on what we've seen, and it's not a ton from Sexton so far. If you get the number two pick, where are you leading? Barrett, Morant, or even somebody else?
Barrett would probably be my pick just because I think you can slot him into what they already have a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you're going to draft the best player available, and the presence of Colin Sexton shouldn't really stop you. I mean, you look at the history of the eighth overall pick. The Cavs have had four of the last eight with Nick Stauskas, Brandon Knight, Marquise Chris, and Colin Sexton. None of these guys are guys that would prevent you from drafting someone at their position. But I think Barrett has the best chance to kind of be that point forward that you need, provide some supplemental playmaking. I trust his shooting a little bit more. Morant, I'm very high on as well. I would not be upset at drafting him. But there are some concerns with the outside shooting. I think he has a longer way to go with his mechanics than Barrett does. But he's really a dynamic guy that can get points for himself and others.
I agree as far as Morant goes. I'm intrigued, like I said, with Reddish. I think Jackson Hayes from Texas is a very appealing, intriguing young prospect. He's a guy who played not a whole bunch of basketball. He was a lacrosse player and just a freak athlete at 6'11". And then I like Jared Culver as well. I think I draw that line there as far as the top picks go. I think I have like a tier of picks 2 through 6, and then it kind of drops off a little bit. But it's maybe a conversation for another time. Tell me about Colin. How much have you... Like, I go back and forth on whether or not I've completely adjusted my ceiling for Colin Sexton. Point guards often take forever to develop. Sometimes it all clicks into place, you know, when they're age 25, 26. You think about the Lowrys of the world or Goran Dragic. There's a whole lot of examples of guys who are late bloomers as far as point guards go. I think a lot of us have been a little let down with what we've seen from Sexton so far, but certainly there are things to build on, right, Justin?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's hard not to be let down a little bit when you consider that he's kind of the one major piece that you got back for Kyrie Irving.
Right.
But I think we've been spoiled by point guards in the NBA recently. We've had so many guys that have come in and were able to run an offense right off the bat, Kyrie being one of them. Damian Lillard is another guy that kind of stands out, where traditionally that's typically a position where you'd see more time being needed to develop and learn the game. I thought Sexton's performance this year was really going to be tied heavily to who he has around him. I thought Kevin Love was going to be very important in his development. And obviously they haven't really played any minutes together at all. So I think he's been encouraging from the fact that I didn't expect him to be able to shoot this well early on. I think his decision-making is as poor as advertised, and I would have liked to see a little more defense, but he's been thrown in possibly the worst possible situation for him. He's had no shooting round. And I think at this point, what he really needs is an off season with NBA trainers to get that strength, learn how to get to the line and study some film.
Yeah. The inability to finish among the trees, I think we all sort of expected that to be an issue. I mean, guys don't often leave. Some of it is mental and some of it is physical. So you build up your body a little bit. Maybe if you add a little bit more of a, you know, an in-between game, maybe things sort of open up. It's just really, right, really difficult to watch. I assumed he'd be able to make the simple pass. He can get where he wants to typically. So if you're breaking down a defense, I'm going, just make the simple dump off or the simple kick out. And some of that stuff has been frustrating to watch him develop. But again, you know, for some guys, if the jumper gets a little bit better, or if you get up over 5 free throws attempted per game, you know, everything can kind of click into place and have that domino effect. I'm trying to preach patience with him, but it's been difficult so far. Tell me about Kobe Altman and the job he's done. I think obviously you've got that big X on his resume going back to the Kyrie deal. And of course, a lot of people approved of it when it first happened. It just didn't work out in hindsight. But Kobe Altman, I feel like at least so far this season and post the LeBron era, he's done a pretty good job of doing what he needs to do to recoup some assets and get this thing moving forward quicker than I think some expected it to be.
Yeah, for sure. And that Kyrie deal is tough. I mean, when you're trying to trade a star that's threatening to have season-ending knee surgery, if you don't move him, that puts you in a position where you don't have a ton of leverage. Still think it's probably the best deal from an asset standpoint available, but just didn't pan out. I think a lot of the deals that he's made have made a lot of sense on paper. I think his ability to get 2 first-round picks, 6 second-round picks, for essentially just George Hill, Rodney Hood, and Kyle Korver, that's really encouraging. Those second-round picks, as on their own, probably aren't the most valuable, but what they do help is they help you get deals kind of over the goal line.
Right.
If you're looking to trade for additional assets, maybe this draft being a little bit weaker, you're able to trade into it and get another first round pick or move up potentially if the lottery luck doesn't end up in their way. The other nice thing is the bad salaries he took on in exchange for those picks are all expiring contracts next year. So those are guys that you might be able to flip for additional assets moving forward, which is really a nice position to put himself in. So I think he's done a good job so far, but this is kind of the easier part when you have an owner that's willing to pay a lot of money for a bad team to take on assets. It helps you a ton, but it's the building that's more impressive, and that's going to be what really defines his tenure.
Justin Rowan with me from Fear the Sword and the Chase Down Pod. You and Carter do such a great job with the pod and with the website and everybody else that contributes to Fear the Sword. And you guys are, I don't know if you're the Cavs Twitter trolls, but at this point, Justin, there's not much going on as a Cavaliers fan aside from laughing at all of the misfortune in Boston and in Los Angeles and across the league. Anytime there's any sort of modicum of misfortune in Golden State, how do you take what is your role in terms of Cavs Twitter, just in terms of sort of antagonizing some of the other bloggers?
Well, first of all, I really do appreciate the kind words about the podcast and the website. My kind of philosophy on all this is, at the end of the day, sports is escapism, and I like kind of holding up a mirror to the absurdity of it all. And my biggest allegiance is to the joke, to the entertainment that comes with it. I think Carter and I try to balance having fun, getting jokes off, and still be somewhat informative. So when you see people that their identity is so wrapped up in the team and the history of their franchise, like you see with Lakers and Celtics fans,
yep,
it becomes a really easy target. And at the end of the day, as I said, it's escapism. We like to have fun, and I like holding up a mirror to that.
Well, you do an outstanding job. And again, make sure you follow Justin on Twitter. It's at CavsAnita. Make sure you check out the Chase Down Pod and all of their great work for Fear the Sword. Justin, thanks, man. This has been fun. Hopefully we can do it again sometime.
No problem. Thanks again for having me.
All right. There he is, Justin Rowan. And, of course, all guests up here on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Some good thoughts there on Kobe Altman. I think he's done a really good job. Maybe Kyrie trade notwithstanding. And again, a lot of people, myself included, liked the deal when it was originally made. Isaiah's hip and Jay Crowder's fit. And then the fact that the Nets were better than a lot of people expected them to be ended up sort of in hindsight making that deal not what you were hoping it was going to be. And anytime you trade a player as great as Kyrie Irving, you're kind of asking for trouble. But I think Kobe Altman's done a really good job of recouping some assets. I think Dan Gilbert deserves credit absolutely for taking on bad money as long as there are assets attached to it. It's going to be another rough season because right now the Cavaliers don't really have a long-term plan because they don't know who to build around. You got to land that franchise superstar, and then it's going to set your course moving forward. And right now you got Sexton you're not really sure of, you got Jetty you're not really sure of, and you've got, you know, Auntie. And I think Jetty's going to be a part of this thing long term. Obviously, before the injury, it was great to see things sort of click into place for him. But Colin's going to take a while. And so the Cavs need to land another top pick, hopefully, in this year's draft. They need to hit on that pick. They need to make a couple good picks in the next two drafts. And then I think you'll start to see the path sort of plotted out for the Cavs moving forward. Okay, 216-578-0092.